Hi, this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Media. Welcome to another Directions Media podcast. Today I will be speaking with Joel Campbell, President of RDOS. Mr. Campbell is a GIS veteran, and we spoke at the Geospatial World Forum in Hyderabad, India, on January 19th. The issues we discussed include the growth of the remote sensing business and the drivers of change within the industry. We talked about the Google effect and what that means for the industry as well. And we talked about coverage, clarity, and currency of remotely sensed data that will be needed to drive the industry further and where RDOS fits in this time of growth in the industry, especially now as part of Hexagon. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Remotely sensed data has gotten like this huge boost. And I know it seems to be a driver in the industry. And so for you to take, you know, kind of ownership of the processing and analysis is got to mean some boost to your business. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing that work?
Yeah, I think it does, especially in new and interesting ways. And you're right. I think data has become the currency that's sort of driving everything now. But, you know, and I don't know if you and I have talked about this before. I've always described it as this sort of logical next step, because what I perceive that's happened in the geospatial community is, you know, we spent 20 or 30 years sort of building databases from whatever source we had, and now we have very mature users who have very mature databases that were constructed that they need to maintain transactionally. What's changing, and the driver of that change is remotely sensed data, right? Either, you know, or what is measurement of some kind, whether it's survey measurement or, you know, aerial photography measurement that's processed, or satellite imagery that's processed. And those are the things that are driving the GIS activity as they work to constantly update their databases and keep them current. Because the Google effect is a currency component, right? It's like, Google's really good, but how current is it? And so, there's a guy at Microsoft, Tom Barclay. I don't know if you ever met him. He was the guy that stood up the, it was called Terra Server, the experiment with SQL Server. And he's one of these think tank guys that works in one of the Microsoft labs. And I can remember talking to him, and he said, you know, it's all about the three things, coverage, clarity, and currency. And by that he meant, do you have all the data for a given geography? Is it of high resolution, high fidelity, and how current is it, right? Those three C's were what drove their thoughts in the virtual Earth experiment. Do we have broad enough coverage? Is it high enough resolution? And how current is it? And I think those are pretty important factors, right?
And I think Jill Smith mentioned that yesterday, too. Remember in her slide where she said, okay, now we get this portfolio of imagery several years back. Okay, so now you've established kind of the baseline stuff. You can have currency because they're going to repeat coverage. And I guess moving forward, you know, they'll cookie cut out an area if you really want it tomorrow. You know. So where are you sitting in all this?
So what if, and that's a great question. So it means a couple things for us. There's a whole lot more data, and that becomes a management nightmare. How do you manage all this imagery that's coming in from multiple time scales, you know, multiple sensor types, and make it all accessible and usable? And that's sort of where we focused a lot of energy in, you know, the management, serving, cataloging sort of technologies that we built. And then there's the processing side. And more often, the processing is not single point processing. Like, I mean, in the old days, you know, you got some film, you scanned it, there was a photogrammetric process that it went through, and it was sort of, you know, always the same process no matter what. Now you're getting some digital data from a push broom camera, some from a you know, a line scanning camera, some from LiDAR, some from satellite, and you want to fuse all of that together. So the photogrammetric aspect of it becomes much more challenging as well when you want to use multi-source data. And so that's another area that we focused and drives our software and drives demand for it, frankly, because it's not a simple process. It's not a vendor-specific process. People are looking for a way to deal with all of their data in an intelligent way. And, you know, we like to think that's where we come in, right?
And then, of course, you got a way to store it. I mean, you got to follow, and the whole issue of where that data is going to reside has got to be a huge headache for people, because, like you said, they want that data, and they want it from various sensor platforms. But now the issue of management and storage and pushing it out is a huge, huge challenge. Mm-hmm. So how has Apollo been in terms of successfully giving that vision to people?
Well, I think from a technology standpoint, it's been extremely successful. Mm-hmm. From a, you know, market perspective and how we communicate it to the market and you know, attract customers to it, that continues to be a challenge for us, because mm-hmm. it's the classic move from selling desktop specific kinds of things to selling enterprise class technology, where there's a whole nother set of issues that you have to deal with: hardware, disk storage, networks, security, you know, all the things that you don't deal with when you just install a seat of Imagine and do your work.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we continue to have challenges. Our distribution network continues to have challenges in getting our arms around how to communicate that the right way, how to support that the right way, and how to sell it the right way. But from a technological standpoint, where we have implemented it, it's phenomenally successful, and it sort of does the trick, and customers love it.
Yeah, and we must be that early in the process, too, because people haven't really truly embraced the cloud just yet.
Right.
Certainly from a management standpoint. But eventually they're going to bump up against this limit where, oh my God, I've got so much data. I've got a management, and it's not doing me any good sitting somewhere. We got to have a way to push it out.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, we sort of jumped into the cloud thing this past year pretty early on. I can't sit here and tell you that it's been, you know, commercially successful for us, although we didn't really expect it to. We wanted it to be a you know, a starting point where we could start to expose customers. But it's interesting. I spoke at a conference a few months ago, and, you know, the overwhelming sort of conversation from users is, well, we can't put our data in the cloud because, you know, it's really sensitive and it's government-owned and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I sat there and I listened to that for a little while, and I kind of said to the audience, I was sitting on a panel, and I said, how many of you have an ATM card? You know, how many of you do online banking? And I'm like, how is it that we can sort of rationalize that that's okay to do on the cloud when it's our money and our personal finances, but when we're talking about geospatial data that, by the way, is going to make our communities better and save lives and do all this other good stuff, we somehow think that's different than my bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was kind of, kind of didn't think of it that way,
yeah.
Right? But we haven't quite made that acceptance level yet in the view. And, you know, this goes back to something from earlier. It's like one of the things that I continue to think is, in a lot of ways, we do ourselves a disservice by talking about GIS, because we try and make it different.
Yeah.
It's just information technology,
yeah.
Right? You know, you know, banks aren't running around talking about how we have the, you know, the banking information system. They just have a transactional database that manages transactions, right?
That's true.
And they figured out all the interoperability to do it transparently on a global... I mean, I can go anywhere in the world and stick my ATM card in and get money.
And it works.
Yeah,
it works.
Instantaneously.
And you'd think that you'd want that type of access for any kind of data remotely sensed being just one of them.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I used to describe it as... and I know you don't like the geospatial world, but I used to describe it as geospatial dial tone.
Yeah.
How is it that we build a system that all you do is plug in and it's there?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's always on, it's always available, it's always up to date.
So that brings up the interesting question of remotely sensed data. And, you know, is Google the appliance for satellite data? And, you know, how would RDoS capitalize on whether it's static data or real-time data? Because you have to move up the value chain in terms of not just staying in the geospatial professional world. There's going to be that mid-level guy who will eventually understand what satellite data does and what it can do for you. So are you thinking in those terms about moving up the value chain, or at least providing the mechanism to see it? Because what concerns me is that the whole issue of the Google Earth Engine. where you think you can do image processing online without the need of a, you know, on-premises or whatever you want to call, you know, a piece of software that we have now, an Imagine, for example. You know, you would probably say you'd want Imagine in the cloud.
Yeah, Imagine in the cloud, yes and no. I mean, the functionality of Imagine, I mean, I think where we're all going is these, you know, algorithms that are used by software like Imagine to do whatever process, whether it's simple classification or change detection or aerial triangulation. You know, at the end of the day, they're just mathematical algorithms that, you know, we can turn into
data.
And we can turn them into services.
Mm-hmm.
And those can be web-based services that can work in the cloud or over your local network or however you want to do that. And we're moving more in that direction. You know, we have worked with the OGC to sort of spearhead the drive towards web processing services.
Right.
But, you know, I think, Joe, the way we keep looking at it, and, you know, at the end of the day, we could be wrong, but we keep looking at it as Google Earth is sort of ultimately going to be people's viewing mechanism. So whatever we do, we want to make sure that we're in a position to leverage that. It doesn't mean we don't have our own viewers and our own stuff, but those people that are comfortable using a Google Earth and they want that to be their preferred viewing environment, we need to be in a position to be able to, you know, hand over the data, hand over the processed information, and let it be viewed in that environment, and not sort of discount it for what it is. Because I think at the end of the day, what it is, you know, an extremely intuitive, very simple, you know, no training required,
yeah,
3D, 2D geospatial viewing tool, right?
Yeah.
Does a few things very simply, click this button, click that button, you're done. And that's what people are attracted to versus what you and I are comfortable with, which is, you know, a traditional desktop that you go to class for a week on, you know, to learn all the ins and outs of where little buttons and tools are to do stuff, right? They changed the way people look at geospatial viewing technology and made it completely intuitive, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, in our latest release, we've built those live links. So if you're working in Imagine and, you know, you create a classification and you want to view that in Google Earth, it's just dynamically linked over there and you can view it in Google Earth.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And how far they go down the how far they go down the processing world, sort of with their engines and stuff, is an interesting question. But I think the challenge for them is the currency aspect. Because in some ways their system is closed, sort of only using their own data. And unless their data is of the right currency and clarity, then it doesn't matter what their engine will process. People are still going to want to have, you know, more current, more high fidelity data, and maybe even a, you know, a more accepted processing capability, right, that's, you know, been proven in the market for a bunch of years. And so I think that still leaves an area for companies like ours to expose our expertise and our lineage,
yeah,
you know, in a way that's useful to customers, even if they want to view it a different way.
Yeah, yeah. We can stop there, but I got one thing that just came up was, how much functionality do you eventually put into Imagine before you think about breaking it up into pieces where, okay, I only want that piece to do this type of image processing, or this piece to do just visualization? Have you ever thought about that?
We look at them as parallel tracks. So we're not only continuing to add capabilities into Imagine in the traditional way, we're bringing more photogrammetric capabilities into Imagine that historically have been in, like, in our photogrammetric packages like LPS, and sort of that convergence of remote sensing and photogrammetry into a single software framework.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, we're looking at how do you expose those things as web services, so that, you know, web processing services, so that, you know, people can just take a little piece of it and say, well, look, all I really do is a land use classification. I don't need this whole big Imagine thing for my 20 planners. All I need is, you know, I'm going to predefine a classification algorithm with all of its parameters. I want to publish that as a service, and then my 20 planners can just use it as a web thing. And we see that as a viable future. And so the way we've thought about that, again, we could be wrong, but the way we're thinking about that is Imagine becomes this sort of authoring tool, and you model it and you refine it in Imagine, you build it, and then you publish it. And once it's published, then it's a web service that people can take advantage of.
Yeah.
And that's exposed through Apollo.
Yeah, right? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So we just view them parallel, not sort of mutually exclusive. They kind of all work together and just move forward. And there'll be some customers that rapidly adopt web processing services, and there'll be others who sort of continue to be traditional. Sometimes I think about, like India is probably a really good example. I just was sitting in a presentation. There's 1.2 billion people in India. There's 600 million mobile phones. There's 60 million internet users. So there's an order of magnitude more mobile phone users than internet users. But what that really means is they just skipped. Because if you think about the U.S., we went to the internet, then we went to the mobile phone, smartphones, sort of web on the phone, in the second phase. Places that are developing like India, China, Brazil, Russia, they just skip the middle step and just go right to the end. Right? And I think in our context, the same will be true. We've got all these desktop users, and some of them will migrate over time to the mobile phone equivalent or web processing service, but others will just skip a step and go straight to the web processing service.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to comment, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend.